John, you have a new album out entitled Oliva, and talk about what you currently have going on at this moment.
Sure. Well, I got the new album came out a few weeks ago, and it's doing really well, and I'm really happy with it. And you know, it's got a lot of cool stuff on. I think people are going to really enjoy it. It's got the last music of Chris's that I had left, and it's really weird because it ended up being the earliest stuff we ever wrote. So the stuff that you hear on this record, Chris Oliva's contributions, are some of the first things he ever wrote, riffs he ever wrote. So it's very cool in that aspect. I had a great time doing it, and doing that and working with Paul Trans-Siberian Orchestra at the same time, I'm ready for a rubber room. You know, you got an extra rubber room up there in Cleveland?
Well, I got a... Yeah, not really. Nothing, okay, nothing like that up there for you. But
anyway, but that, and I'm started rehearsing for the Storytellers tour that I'm going to be doing in late November, early December. I am coming up that way. I think I got one, a show in Pittsburgh. I think I got one that's going to be booked in Cleveland here shortly, because I'm doing Pittsburgh. So, and that's going to be a lot of fun, and people are going to be able to hear a lot of cool stuff, different versions of Sabotage songs. I'm going to kind of do a whole history and play some versions of stuff the way they were originally written, which no one's ever heard because they were never demoed up. Mm-hmm. They were just from the songwriting tapes and stuff that I had, and they would be like the first versions of the songs that, you know, some of Chris and I wrote together. And it goes through the whole history, and I tell some great funny stories, some road stories that are true stories and are pricelessly funny. So it's going to be a good time. You know, it's a sit-down event. You know, it's for small crowds. I'm looking at doing, you know, 200 to 400 seat places. I'm doing a lot of small theaters and a couple performance places, music store performance stages that are like 300 people, because it's got to be up close and intimate. So, and I'm really excited about that. And other than that, I'm, you know, writing a new JOP album at the same time, so I'm like out of my mind right now, but I'll make it.
Well, you release it under the name Oliva as opposed to, say, John Oliva's Pain, and I'm assuming that's because it's to symbolize you and your brother.
Right, that and the fact that it was really, you know, I really the only person on the album except Chris Kinder, the drummer, plays on some of the songs, and my friend Dan Fasciano, who wrote some of the songs with me, plays organ on some songs. Other than that, I played everything myself, so it was a lot of fun, and it was just cool, you know, doing it. So that's why I called it that, because it did has the last of Chris's music. If you see the cover, it's, you know, that tells you all the whole story right there. It's got his guitar on the cover with the rose and my piano, and it's very cool. I'm very happy with it, and so far it's doing really well for me too, so I'm a happy camper, Tony.
Now, the great thing about this record is the fact that, and it's usually the case with all of your music, John, is that there's a lot of diversity to it. And did you go into this record with the intent to say, hey, you know, I'm going to write a really diverse record, or were these just songs you had written, or was this, you know, talk a bit about the songs?
Yeah, my idea for the album was to make it like a movie on CD. Like, you walk into the theater, or like a live performance, you walk into the theater, you sit down, the song Raise the Curtain starts, and the curtains slowly start to rise, and then the actual concert kicks off when the imaginary John Oliva band runs out on stage and they kick into the second song, which is Soul Chaser, which is the first vocal song, and that's where, to me, the show starts. So that's the first track, and then the next song I bring the horn section out, and, you know, for the song 10 years, I bring them out, and I try to do it like a movie, you know, ups and downs, and you know, you got to do that. It keeps it interesting because you never know what's next, you know. And mix it about like a performance, and then at the end, Can't Get Away, everybody, the last song, Can't Get Away, everybody's out there, horn section, everybody, that, you know, everything's going on, and then it ends, and the exit music is that acoustic song at the end. Mm-hmm. So, and then, you know, the show's over, get up and leave. That's how I wanted it to be. Like, you'd have to imagine John playing drums, John playing piano, John singing, John playing guitar, and John playing bass. So fortunately, there's only one of me and not five lunatics running around. So So I did it that way. Like, I kind of typed it from kind of the Sgt. Pepper vibe, how it was supposed to be like a performance that couldn't be done on stage. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I used a lot of weird instruments. I mean, I used a lot of vintage instruments, a lot of weird stuff, sitars and fuzz basses and, you know, guitars through Leslie's cabinets, real Leslie cabinets, and I used all Vox and Vox amplifiers, old school tube amplifiers, and the album came out sounding like it has that classic rock feel to it, which it needed to be, because that's a lot of the material was from that era that Chris and I wrote when he was very young. The song Father Time, that's the second riff he ever wrote. That's the second riff Chris ever wrote, was that down. You know, so that alone makes it, to me, really cool, because he was like 14 or 15 when he wrote that riff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then so that's special to me, you know, that having that there, I knew it had to have that kind of feel, the album had to have that kind of feel. And then I throw, you know, the heavy stuff in there, I mix it in and about, you know, to kind of pick you up, and then, you know, a couple of the ballads are cool, the Soldier song, I really like that song a lot. I like it very much. I'm very happy with it. I spent a year doing it, so yes, and it's doing pretty good. It's doing really well in Holland and Germany right now, so we'll see what happens.
Well, I'll tell you what, I really love this album quite a bit. I mean, at first it started off with a couple songs I was really digging on it, and then it came to the point where I really loved every song on it. And you know, the song 10 Years, for example, was a song that really just kind of stood out for me. And you know, talk a bit about the lyrical content of this record, and you know, maybe specifically about that song, because it's still probably my favorite song on the record.
Well, I mean, the song 10 Years is definitely, I'm writing about myself, you know, and because I'm saying, you know, that song came from after Matt died, you know, and I remember thinking, you know, good God, it was, you know, just, they said, you know, I was like, God, where, I remember Matt first playing with me in, like, 2003, you know, when I first started the JOP thing, and, you know, and he, I was just thinking about it, and I was like, Jesus, where did those 10 years go? You know, they just seemed like it was 2 years ago, and it was really 10 years, and that's where the whole idea for the lyrics came out of that. And it's, I say, you know, I've been places, so many spaces I've, you know, seen, can't believe I survived it all, and, you know, just talking about the whole thing. So that's really the only song that's really on the album that's about me, like, that I'm talking about myself. And everything else is kind of, you know, I've got a couple ideas from some horror flicks. The song Soul Chaser is a really cool thing. It was from this old English horror flick I saw, and this creature would follow these people around, and the guy turns around, it's old black and white English, goes, "Who are you? Who are you?" And the guy goes, "I am the Soul Chaser." I was like, ting! You know, it was a lot of that stuff happening. You know, there's the Soldier song, obviously, that was, you know, about someone coming back from war and being, you know, without any leg, and how he's dealing with it, and is his wife still going to love him, you know, or, you know, you know what I'm saying? It's been that vibe. So, you know, a lot of it, they just came about. Stalker, another one that came from a horror flick, you know, some creepy dude following people around. So I get them from everywhere. I've written so many songs right now, I'm like, if a cockroach runs across the floor, it gives you an idea. You know, you're like looking for new, because you sang so many songs about so much. Yeah, I find it, you know, so I just, it's whatever inspires me when it comes to it, you know, that's what I'll write about, you know, so.
Well, you know, John, I get a lot of people that email me, and they always email me asking, you know, will Sabotage ever get back together, and, you know, why isn't that band around and putting out albums anymore? But then I almost kind of look at it, and I write them back, and it's almost like, you know, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, for example, and John Oliva's Paint, it's almost like that's the continuation of that band. It's a continuation of Sabotage, in a sense.
is, yeah, you're going to love the new JOP record because it's really going to be a monster. It's really, really heavy. It's probably that I said that was my next thing I was going to do is do the heaviest album I've ever done. That's my quest for this album. So we've written like eight or nine songs so far. There's no flutes or pianos on this. It's brutal. I can't wait for that to come out. I'm going to try to get that out by early spring next year. I'm going to try to record it in January and February and get it out. I don't have a title for it yet, but it's very heavy, very heavy.
Now, John, I'd like to ask you a quick question about Trans-Siberian Orchestra because, you know, one of the things that I remember when the first album actually had come out, and, you know, it's gotten pretty big. Did you ever think it would get as big as it has so far?
Not really. I mean, I'm shocked every Christmas when this thing, you know, I'm really shocked because I thought, you know, if we had a 4 or 5 year run at it, it would be, you know, that would be great, you know. But I mean, this is going on, what, 15 years now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's right. It's been the first time we started doing the Christmas run was, what, 96 or 97, I think.
Yeah.
Like I said, 10 years have slipped away. Yeah, I never thought it was going to get to this level. I mean, but I'm really happy that it did because a lot of the people involved in this really worked. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, the sabotage history that goes with it. You know, really, if you think about it, we really were all together since 87. You know, Johnny, you know, me, Paul, you know, from Sabotage started. You know, that's where I go back. So, you know, it's amazing.
Well, the thing that's pretty cool about it, too, is that there are so many former Sabotage members that are in TSO.
Yeah, well, we kept everybody there because we really never, you know, that's what people, Sabotage really never broke up. We just kind of morphed into this thing, Trans-Siberian Orchestra. It was really just all the guys from Sabotage and Paul and me writing, and we just brought more people into the mix because we wanted to expand everything, expand our sound and try different things. And, you know, we couldn't get away with that as Sabotage. It was like a dated, it was just wasn't working, you know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm.
And when we released 1224 and it sold crap under Sabotage, and then we released it the next year as Trans-Siberian Orchestra and it sold, what, 2 million records or whatever,
mm-hmm.
It was kind of a clue that we were probably should do something. And that's what we did. We just kind of, then we just said, well, now we can, let you know, since it's an orchestra, we can add, you know, a string section and bring them on. You know what I'm saying? We have multiple singers and, you know, we can use this narration stuff and do these rock operas, which is what we were doing with Sabotage anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dead Winter Dead, Wakened Magellan, Poets and Madmen were all story. You know, we're all stories.
Yeah.
So, you know, all we really did was change the name and add more people to pay.
Well, it's almost interesting. It's interesting the fact that you have split the band. You have two different Trans-Siberian Orchestra bands actually touring, and I always found that to be interesting because you can, you know, kind of spread yourselves out a little bit and play more dates and stuff like that. You know, I mean, that's interesting.
Well, we can't cover all the venues. It's impossible in that period of time that we have to do it, which is, you know, early November through the end, you know, through the end of December. You know, for one band to cover all, that you could never do it. So that's why we, you know, either if they're either West Coast or East Coast, they all are part of the band. They all, you know, they and they're all there. It's just we've got so many people. It's like I got a great idea. Let's split them up and send them this, and it works. You know, it's and we alter it every year. Different, you know, different people in and out, so everybody gets to see everybody, and you know, it's worked for us really well. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, to you know, you don't even want to know what we go through with rehearsals and getting this show, TSO show up on the road. It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare, dude. It's a total nightmare. That's all I can tell you.
I remember, and I've read in interviews, how one of the songs that really had a special meaning to you was on the Streets album. The song, Tonight He Grins Again. And I remember you loved doing that song. And what is it about that song that really has a special meaning to you?
I think it was the lyrics, you know, the lyrics, because it kind of like, even though when we had the lyric, it wasn't thought of. It's one of these songs, there's two songs, that one and If I Go Away, that when they were written, they had a different meaning, okay? But, you know, when after they were recorded and we started, it was like you think back and you're playing it every night. You're going like, wait a minute, man, this is me. This is what's going on here. And If I Go Away was written and recorded while Chris was alive. But if you listen to the song, If I Go Away, it sounds like I'm talking to Chris.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the lyrics, it's really freaky. And it's the same thing with Tonight He Grins Again with Me. It's like, I even though I didn't know it when we recorded it, I was talking about myself, really. Paul and I, because we wrote the lyrics together for that song. So I think Paul might have been thinking it as part of the story, you know, the street story, but in retrospect, it's really, he's talking about me. And, you know, that's weird.
Well, I got a couple more questions for you, because we're going to near the deadline here in a little bit. You know, the first question I was going to ask you, and you've worked with a lot of great musicians over the years, you know, is there anybody out there that, in your opinion, who would you love to work with that you've never worked with before?
Wow. Alive or dead?
It could be alive or dead, it doesn't matter.
John Lennon. There you go.
Awesome.
John Lennon, definitely.
You know, some bands always work with the same producer because they just have that bond with them that just gives them their sound, or they have a great relationship with them as far as songwriting goes. And you have worked with Paul O'Neill now for a very, very long time, almost over 25 years now. And what is it about Paul that has kept you guys working together?
Because he's crazier than I am, and I don't know, man. We have a definite connection. We had from the first time we worked together, and you know, I mean, we understand each other. We come from the same school. We love all the same bands. We're all the records that he had in his collection, I had in my collection. So it was just a very natural thing. And, you know, I mean, it does get crazy sometimes because, you know, with genius comes lunatic. The lunatic side of you comes out. And Paul sometimes gets very intense, man. It's he's a great... First of all, he's a great person, you know, on top of everything else. He's the most generous person I've ever met. But he's very, very smart, you know, like book smart. And, you know, it's exciting to work with him because he comes up with these things that I would never in a million years have thought of as lyrics and stuff. I don't even know what the word means. Like, some of the stuff he comes up with. So it's very cool, man. You know, we've done really good with this TSO thing. It's worked out really well for us. And, you know, but we worked hard to get there. You know, we worked 10 years when we first started working with Paul in 87.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mountain King, 87. So, you know, and TSO didn't really, you know, really get big until, what, 2007, really, I think, is when it really started getting big. So, wow, you know, we worked 20 years to get there. So, but it's great. It's great working with him.
Well, I have one more question, John, and that'll be the end of it here. Is there any last words you'd like to say to the fans that will be checking out this interview?
Well, I hope you enjoy it, and, you know, pick up the CD, and I'll see you guys on the road in November, December. Thanks a lot, and God bless you, man. Take care.